Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the podcast powered by Hobbs.
And welcome everybody once again to the Bits and Pieces podcast. And today I am joined by the delightful Diane Jones from Flexible Business. And we're going to talk about people, which is a bit of a broad subject. So hi, Diane.
Hiya. Hi, Dave. Nice to meet you.
Are you well?
Yeah, very, very warm. I'm in an office at the moment looking out at the sun and being a bit like I'm in an oven. But yeah, love it. Love the weather.
I must admit, I'm sat in one of our offices and I've got the window shut and it's absolutely boiling. But yeah, we're going to plough through this. So for those who don't know who you are and haven't come across your LinkedIn, which I'm sure is in the minority, give us a quick intro to yourself and what you've been doing and what you're doing now.
Yeah, of course. Thanks, Dave. So I've worked in bids and business development for about the past 12 years now. I started off my career, as I'm sure some people will find this a familiar tale, of working in a service. Bid came out to re-tender and I was asked to kind of come in and support the bid. And this was at Care UK, which is now Practice Plus Group. And I started working on their prison healthcare bids. And I just never really left the team after that. And it was great because it felt like it really suited me. And I worked with Practice Plus Group for nearly 10 years and led their bids and business development strategy in prison healthcare services and other places of detention. And we were really successful. And I think that's why, again, one of the reasons that I'm really happy to be talking to you today is that it was me with a great team. So a great team of people that are around me that worked really hard to do those bids and be successful. And it's great to see that Practice Plus Group continue to be successful in this space. I then spent a couple of years working across Serco's and Mighty's type companies, so the large kind of corporate outsourcers, and came a point where I had to decide what I was doing with my career. So I was working in the justice space for Serco and Mighty, and it was all enjoyable. Again, great people around me doing great things. But I think I had a moment where I think working in large corporate organisations wasn't necessarily for me. And I'd always decided at one point in my career I wanted to be my own boss, and and I took the plunge about a year ago after a former colleague approached me to ask me if I was going to help or be able to help them on a bid. And it was a discussion with my husband about, is this the time to take the leap? And we did. And so FBS, or Flexible Business Solutions, which is a little bit of a mouthful, was formed. And we haven't really looked back for the last year. We did that bid. It was successful, which is great. And we've been working solidly for the last year on bids, tenders, BD strategies, everything kind of in between, with a great range of companies. And that's how I find myself here today, talking to you, Dave.
I mean, I've known you a while, and I've been looking at your CV and this sort of stuff in the, you know, in your LinkedIn profile where you've been. And I mean, you know, I think you do yourself a little disservice with sort of the progression in the roles that you've done. You know, in some various companies, so you've been fairly seen. To be fair, I mean, I think that's something to be quite proud of what you achieved. And I think, like everybody in the bids mid world, to be fair, you know, none of us really left school and went, I tell you what, I'm going to become a bid manager or I'm going to become a bid writer. I mean, yes, there are now, because people are starting apprenticeships and this sort of stuff, and that's great to see. I mean, you know, we've got one of our guys, I mean, she's done the APMP apprenticeship. You know, she came out of university, did that, and moved on. And then, you know, you see this with people like Mace and Morgan Sindel and a few other people who do these graduate intakes. So, I mean, it's good in that instance that people are getting the younger generation in. But I suppose there's a lot of talk at the moment, a lot of noise, for want of a better phrase, around technology coming in. And I suppose that really does impact on our people. And obviously, I've done a couple of previous podcasts on team building, building a team. How would you sort of approach that at the moment? I mean, how would you sort of build a team, or what's the most sort of critical factors within that?
I think that it can be really difficult to recruit to a good bid team and to get the right people involved, because bidding is hard. Like the saying that I have that lots of people hear me is that if you're finding this hard, it's because it is. And so actually you're right, it is difficult, and finding the right people that are kind of resilient enough to work in that environment can be really tough. And having the right leadership mindset and the right management mindset is really important too. And what I've always had great success with is being incredibly communicative with my team, being really open about how I'm feeling and trying to cut through some of what is the kind of corporate type approach to management that can be quite transactional. And actually I try to engage with staff and understand what their other motivators are, because we'll have all written it in bids about this being, you know, holistic services and things like that, and sometimes we forget that our people are more than just their job as well, and that they've got lots of other motivators that sit around them that can impact on what's going on in their lives and how they're operating at work. And so I always try to make sure that we kind of work with people on a human level, and the people that want to engage with me in that way again tend to be a lot more successful. And some of that is just as simple as you're always going to be able to go to your parents' evening or your kids' show, or if you need to just pop into town to do something, and kind of building some flexibility into what we do is super important. And with everything that's happening with AI and tech and whatnot going into bidding, from a people perspective, I think the messaging is incredibly important, that we're not trying to make people feel like this is something that's coming in to replace you. This is more about, I would suggest from a people's perspective, about how tech can enable people to do their jobs, and really focusing on tech as an enabler rather than a replacer. And that's how I would see it being a benefit to teams and helping to build a bit of resilience and taking out some redundancy in the system rather than just a kind of direct replacement.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose AI's it's been around for donkey's years in some form or other. But I suppose the last 18 months, I think everyone's getting a little bit sort of bored of talking about it. And it does seem to be the hot topic, and it does seem to be the one topic that everybody is engaged with at the moment. But I am thinking on the people side of stuff. So where you see, I suppose, larger corporations more than anything, you know, looking at this, and, you know, is the human impact, or the impact of humans, being entered into the equation? Or is it just the people saying, well, there's technology, we're going to use it, you're going to slightly change it? So, I mean, I was wondering actually how much people who are writing stuff, I suppose, one better phrase, championing it, trying to push it, are actually considering the human side of it.
Absolutely. I agree with you. I've seen I've seen lots on LinkedIn. Of course, there's a huge amount of discourse about AI on LinkedIn, and I've seen some platform sellers that are clearly targeting decision makers and will be targeting the motivations of decision makers, and that's really the money, isn't it, and the budget that you could save by bringing this platform in. I've also seen others that are framing it more around an enabler and kind of part of your, you know, puzzle. It will get you 50% of the way, you know, that kind of thing. And I think that balance is really important. And I was thinking about this and reflecting about what made me successful in my career. And it is always the people. It's always the people that are on my team. You know, I can name lots and all of them now that were part of me from that journey from 12 years onwards to now. And they were the ones that made me successful, not how well I use my cloud-based software to manage my process. It was a good part of it and made it a bit easier, but it was the people around me that created that success. And I was trying to think, would I have been so successful if it was me and an AI piece of software, which might be a slight extreme kind of comparison, but I wouldn't have got close. And so it isn't the answer to all of it. And it's interesting that you're talking about the kind of larger corporates. And I think that that actually there's a kind of a bell curve interest, isn't there? And everyone's super interested in it. And I think that that would die down and level off when the realization is that it's part of the answer, not the full answer. I do think that there's a responsibility with AI platform sellers and our industry as a whole to think about how we market this towards SMEs as well, and that they aren't organizations that can necessarily afford to recruit bid teams, and that's why they will extensively use consultants to kind of plug in and look after an opportunity and go away. And I think there's an element of marketing platforms as their answer to not having to use consultants and not having to use a bid team. And again, I think that that isn't the answer, because you can't, and we know as BD people, as bid people, that you can't speculatively bid everything. You'll just waste your time, you won't win it. And that kind of messaging, lessons and strategy gets lost by just plugging in a platform into someone. So I think that there's balance. It's got a place, but it's a place within a people-led service and a people-led industry.
Yeah, and I suppose that sort of follows on to my next point, where we can't stop technology. You know, everybody knows that. And actually, what we should be doing is embracing it and driving it forward and using these tools, because they are tools. Do you see a place in time or a fear, for want of a better phrase? I'm not trying to fearmonger or anything, don't get me wrong, where people's roles will endemically change. So whereas before you had a bid writer who would produce the answer plan, who would produce the storyboard for it, and so on, now we'll be going, plug the question into my AI, get the answer out, and then just refine it. Mm-hmm. You know, is that going to happen? And are we losing a whole skill set by doing that? I mean, I don't think we would, but I mean, I think these are questions I think we need to raise. Because obviously, you know, it's taken us, I mean, the bid industry is what, probably 20, 25, maybe 30 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And we've grown so much in that period. Mm-hmm. And then now it looks like potentially are we going down a contraction, want of a better phrase? I'm not sure if I'm making any sort of sense there whatsoever.
Yeah, it does. I know exactly what you mean. And with my background in the justice service, we saw what happened when all of the prisons went through a thing called benchmarking. And so Grayling went in and told all of the prisons what they thought their staffing profile needed to be. And it was obviously a lot less than what it was. And they put through a kind of voluntary redundancy scheme into prisons. And they lost an incredible amount of experience and knowledge through doing that, which has destabilized prisons and into such a state that they're still recovering from it. And we lost people with 30 plus years of experience of working in really complex environments. And again, maybe my examples are quite extreme, but we're at risk of losing a lot of experience that's been built by decision makers that are kind of sat up here going, platform can do it. I've taken these roles out of my cost line, and you can now have this as your bid coordinator, bid writer, you know, all of this kind of thing. And we all know, all of us as bid professionals know, that that is not how a bid works. And we really do, I think, need to be advocating for this as an enabler of your kind of your current teams. And personally, as a bid professional and someone wondering if I'm building a sustainable business, of course it does worry me when I look and see platforms saying you don't need, you know, all of these consultants coming in. But you know, there's the clients that we've worked with, I would argue, don't necessarily all come with the same view of that AI is the answer to their problems. I think they know really it's a part of the answer, but not the full answer. And I had a really interesting discussion with a commissioner, and he was talking about a quote he'd seen from a publisher, and he said it had really resonated with him, which was, why should I be bothered to read something that you can't be bothered to write? And I think that that's the really important balance.
Absolutely love that.
And I think it's the really important balance to kind of walk here is that absolutely, I'm not anti-AI. Please don't like think that I am. I see it as part of it, and it'd be really naive of me to think that we didn't have to move with the times, but and kind of pivot towards how it's a part of our team. But it's a part of our team. It's not your answer to how all bids are written going forward. And I would be devastated if I lost some of the people that I work with because they were replaced by AI, and I think their process would suffer and outcomes would suffer as a result.
Yeah, and I suppose in some respects, when we talk about people, when we talk about this new technology coming in, the one thing that sort of struck me earlier today when I was having a debate on LinkedIn with a couple of the guys about this, you know, it's a similar sort of topic, was actually when you look at AI, the whole point is it writes stuff better for you based on your what the information you've got in your library.
Mm-hmm.
And you've actually then got a fundamental problem, because if your library isn't very good, then AI is not really going to make any difference to your win rates or success or ease of process whatsoever.
No.
So in essence, what we should be advocating, in my very, very simplistic way of looking at stuff, is that use the tool that's there to help you get to that first draft based on your content that you've already written is really, really good,
mm-hmm.
and then refine it and regurgitate it.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think some of the most fulfilling sessions that I've had with organizations have been around your win strategy. What is your answer to all of these questions? You know, how do we sell this? What is your... you know, why are they going to award this to you? And really kind of delving into the detail and actually being creative and pushing innovation and thinking about USPs and really testing, are they actually USPs or do you maybe think they are? And I see AI as enabling people to be more creative and focusing in on the actual pieces that are going to uplift their bids and all of that. And so it's almost like letting AI do the bits of the job that are the ones that leave you working until 10 o'clock at night and actually allow you to then spend your time being creative and driving innovation, which is not only what wins us bids, but when I look at my position in kind of the justice and healthcare space, if anything enables us to be more creative, more innovative into services that we deliver to people, then that's great. And I'd see that as a really positive thing. But like we're saying, it needs to be used right, and it needs to be used to do that. And it's always the same, isn't it? AI is only going to be as good as the information it gets that gets put into it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to kind of go beyond that, is it?
No, not at all. And just sort of picking that apart a little bit more. So I suppose the whole goal of what we're trying to do is to build a sustainable industry, for want of a better phrase, which means we need to attract new talent. Yep. We need to develop the people we've got. How do we go about that? I mean, I'm a great advocate because at sort of 15, 16, 17, when people are choosing what they want to do with their career, you know, we've got kids coming out of school. I haven't yet seen that reach. I could be completely wrong here, of course. I mean, I'm saying I haven't seen that reach. My daughter has just been, she just finished her A-levels. You know, they have people coming into talks to them. Nobody came into them and said, right, let's do a talk about working in submissions or tenders or business development or stuff like this. It was very much the traditional skills, the new technologies. I mean, luckily, my daughter's one of these that doesn't want to be an influencer, which is, I think, rare these days. But it is this, you know, are we missing that beat there where, you know, we're attracting people at university or you've got degrees? Are we going far enough back? Do we need to start talking to these kids about actually what they want to do with their career?
Yeah.
And once we've gone, how do we develop them?
Yeah, that's a great question. And if someone had told me when I was 18 years old that you're going to be the business development director of justice and immigration for a a large outsourcer, I'd be like, a what? It definitely wasn't where I saw my career going at all. And I feel very lucky that I found this career, because I do feel like I was kind of made for it, really. But it was absolutely, totally unintentional. And I had a really interesting kind of back and forth with someone around people with literature degrees, because it's seen as one of the kind of most wasted degrees not clear about what people do with their time. It's like, you know, people just think you do a lit degree, you want to be a book writer. And I feel like I should perhaps one day write a book, but I'm not sure that I've got the attention span for that.
I tried it, never finished it.
Yeah. Lots of ideas. Maybe AI, right? I totally agree, because it is a profession that is incredibly skilled. And you'll talk to all bid writers and will tell you it's an art, because it is writing like nothing else. And going in and getting people from a younger age getting into this as a profession, I think is really vital, because there's a huge career trajectory for it. You know, I literally started off bid writing as a bid writer, and now, like I say, I was, you know, BD director, just as an immigration, it sounds really grand. But that's, you know, that's your career trajectory. That's what you can move up to, other commercial roles, all sorts of development that you can do. So I think that we are underselling this, because I think it's currently kind of seen as the type of thing that you get moved into by organisations that you start working for, and they kind of go advertise the role and you're like, maybe I could do that. But bids and business development is different to sales, and how do we attract people into that role who are creatives and who want to be creative and do that in a really attractive way? And I think that what we need to make sure we're not doing is saying that this is a dying art because AI is going to come in and take it all over, and actually thinking about the skill sets of writers and how they need to change in the face of emerging technology. And you still need to be able to be a good bid writer. You still need to be able to read something really well and interrogate it and make sure it answers the question. And we can start to build in AI prompt training, all of this kind of thing, you know, as we kind of move with the times. But you'll have done it, I've done it, when you look at someone's done a bid response, lovely written paragraph, AI jump in the middle, lovely written conclusion, and you're just like, oh my god, what is this? And actually that's the skill of a bid writer that I think we can definitely get by getting more creative people kind of attracted into the industry early.
Yeah, no, I suppose that's that's what, in some respects, I suppose that's the nirvana, isn't it? It's you know, getting to first draft a lot quicker than you normally would. And then you've been able to sort of, or the writer been able to throw that creative spark into it to actually, you know, take you from a 5 to a 9, effectively, I mean, is a better phrase.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's always going to, I think recruitment's always a challenge in bids. I think getting people excited about it.
Yeah.
You think, and this is why I think, I mean, I think that, you know, there's bodies out there, there's big companies out there that do these graduate programs, and I just think I think we need to start making a noise, that because if you go to sort of the APME conference, I'm not sure what the demographics are these days. I've not been from myself for a while, but if you look at industry, it does seem to be a sort of 30 plus industry predominantly. I'm gonna say, I'm gonna caveat that immensely, saying that's awesome. So I'm gonna really caveat that heavily. So it is a personal opinion, not fact. But it does seem to be that we're missing that trench of people, that there's a few around.
Yeah.
But I think we need to get more people involved in it. And yeah. I think, you know, there is scope.
And I think you're right. It's looking at, where do you recruit from and who do you target? Because I've had great success with recruiting people who have worked operationally in the services that I then want them to come and write and, you know, develop ideas about. Equally, some of the biggest successes I've had are people that are either returning to work after a kind of short period of time and looking to get back into a career, or have worked in journalism, or they, you know, all of this kind of those kinds of disciplines, and are much younger and much newer and fresher to the working environment. But as we all know, every organization likes to do bids their own way, and yes. having people come in without tons of preconceived ideas about how bids should be run, you can then build and hone your team to develop a process that's optimal for the company that you're working with. So that's again, I've had great success with that. You know, equally, I've been working for the last year, it feels like every day I'm the new girl, and it's as a consultant, you're kind of dropping into new companies all the time, and having to integrate quickly with them can, you know, again be tough. And having my experience background has really helped in that sense too. Yeah. So it's, I don't think there's any one right answer, but I do think I would like people to be brave and think about recruiting from a wider pool rather than just people that have been doing bids for 5 years.
Yeah, definitely. I think the emphasis is really much on new talent and new ways of thinking, and get that new thought process.
Yeah, like challenge what you're doing. You know, it's I love having challenge in the system, and I've always been a manager or leader, I suppose, that invites challenge. Like, I'll say, this is what I think, but guys, tell me if I'm wrong. And I think having that openness and communicative approach in my teams has always, again, helped people feel like they can speak up, and it's always been for the better.
Yeah, I think that's the big key to it. It's I mean, I've heard myself where people said, like, you know, challenge me, am I doing this right? And you're going, well, I don't want to say anything just in case I get it wrong. So I think it's that people being able to challenge.
Yeah.
And knowing that actually if they do challenge and get shot down, it isn't a bad thing.
Talk through your thinking. There's everyone's learning. Every day is an opportunity for me to learn either something new, or that I'm doing something wrong, or I've not hit the mark. And I wish I could say that as someone that's been doing this for 12 years, that all the bid responses I write now, everyone like, oh my God, this is the best thing I've ever written, you know, ever read. And it's not the case. I always get feedback and challenge and have to adapt. And I think that's what makes bids, like bidding, an interesting, or, you know, place, like, because we have to take feedback almost constantly, and so perhaps we are much better at this because we're so used to getting feedback. And so I feel like I'm a much more open person, and I work with my teams much more openly because it's just been drilled into me that you have to take feedback well.
Yeah, and I suppose that is the key to it as well. It's that, you know, yes, you can critique a piece of work, or you can give somebody feedback, and you know that they're not going to go to court and just start crying.
I mean, I have cried sometimes, Dave. I've written some bid responses and got some strong feedback, and maybe I have got upset. Over time, I've managed to not take it quite so personally.
So we're going to move on now to our final part of the pod, which is possibly my favourite part, because I'm just blown away with some of the answers that we've had on this so far. And I think you're going to take it to a whole new level with this one. So what's the best band you've seen live?
So best band I've seen live, I will caveat this with I've seen a lot of bands live, and they range from Steps and Hanson through to Foo Fighters and Red Hot Chili Peppers. So equally cool and uncool, but I would have to say it'd be Nine Inch Nails would be my favourite band that I've seen live.
I swear to God, the answers I'm getting on this question at the moment are just outstanding me. You just don't expect it. I suppose people's musical tastes are what they are, right? But it is quite interesting to see the other side of people, I suppose, when you look at that side.
Well, that's that thing, isn't it? Of, like, you know, the person you see at work is only a part of who they are.
Totally.
You know, the more we know that, and it's interesting with the Nine Inch Nails, because I've just been thinking about this, is that they're a band that have evolved, right? Like, they, you know, started out really kind of quite punky, very, you know, instrument heavy, and now you look at Trent Reznor, his band's totally changed. They're very, you know, heavily electronic, and he's an Oscar-winning composer and all of this. So he's really evolved and adapted and brought tech into his music to keep it modern. And so I thought that that was almost slightly shoehorned it into the structure of the conversation, but it feels quite apt.
That is quite impressive how we managed to do that. So I'll give you marks out for that one.
Thank you.
Diane, it's been an absolute lovely talking to you, as always. And as I said to everybody on the podcast, please get in touch. If you've got any more questions for Diane, reach out to her. If anybody wants to come and spend half an hour chat with me about things, and feel free to. So once again, thank you, Diane, for coming on.
Thank you so much, Dave. Appreciate it.
No worries. And then, on to the next episode. Thanks a lot, everyone.